welcome to the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, led by its Deputy Director General, Ambassador Mxoli Sinkosi, and the rest of your team. Welcome, Ambassador. Honorable members, we have a couple of apologies by Honorable Mahau, Honorable September, Honorable Niwo Truchen, and Honorable C.P. Mulder, who for various reasons could not be here today. I don't know, there are some of the other members whose apologies I haven't seen. I've been told about Honorable Mugu, who is attending, as he sent an apology. Okay, let the apology of Honorable Mubu be noted. It was accidentally left out by the staff here, by the committee secretary. I'll check that, because Honorable Suleiman wrote an apology, I think, what, 2 weeks ago or so. Is it still valid? It's still within the time that he... Okay. So Honorable Suleiman's is also noted, and Honorable Mubu, who's attending, who's in Zambia, as part of the elections monitoring team. Is it the SADC one? The SADC monitoring team. Honorable members, thank you so much. We've noted the apologies. We have one point on our agenda for discussion today. It's a briefing by the department on the establishment of the South African Development Partnership Agency. Now, let me clarify first and foremost, honorable members, that we have noted that there is a draft bill which hasn't yet been formally introduced to us. It is actually coincidental that we have this briefing whilst the process of the draft bill is underway. So this will then basically be a preliminary briefing that has nothing to do with the formal processes of introducing the bill into Parliament. So as I'm saying, it was merely coincidental that there's this other process as well. We know these processes of introducing bills to Parliament. We will engage in that process when, at the appropriate time, when that bill is formally introduced into Parliament. So, I don't know, honourable members, is that clear? I just wanted to put that on the record so that there is no confusion about what we are doing today. Okay, thank you so much. Ambassador Ngosi, the floor is yours, sir, to proceed with the briefing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and greetings to the esteemed Committee on International Relations and Cooperation. Always a pleasure to come and make a presentation here to this. By the mic, okay. Is this one fine?
Yes.
Okay. Is this one better?
Okay. Yeah.
Is this one okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. It's always a pleasure to come here and brief the distinguished representatives of our people on some of the major developments in our area of work, and more specifically today to brief you on a project that we think represents a major development in the architecture of our foreign policy. It represents a coming of age, if you will. It's a new frontier of engagement, which represents a significant trajectory, a major leap in our foreign policy, because as you know, the area of development assistance has been until recently the monopoly of developed countries of the West. It's only recently that we've seen countries of the South, emerging powers, also venturing into this terrain. So it gives us a great deal of pleasure to come and share some of the ideas that we've developed in the department with regards to the issue of our entry into the realm, into the area, into the field of development assistance, and also get some views and perspectives from yourselves on how you think we can better manage our entry into this arena of foreign policy work. Chairperson, I'm accompanied by Mr. Shweib Kasu, who has been anchoring the work around SADMA in the department. Shweib, and he will participate if you give us permission in the discussion later on around this issue, because he's been dealing with the nitty gritty and the details of this question. Chairperson, our presentation covers four broad themes. One is the SADMA area itself, just to give you a sense of our involvement in development cooperation. Two, just to give you a sense of the framework of the ARF, which, if you will, is the forerunner or the precursor to SADMA. And then three, just to brief you on the context as well as the decision within which cabinet took in order to establish SADMA, and for some of the issues that would require attention going forward, including the institutional arrangements, SADMA itself and the funds bill, the project plan going forward, the summary on SADMA, and the strategic framework as well as the program site. Chairperson, just to say that we have been engaged in development cooperation as a country for quite a while. The erstwhile pre-94 government was involved, of course, for reasons of trying to project itself in a particular way on the African continent. It had been involved in development assistance in a few countries that still maintained diplomatic relations with the erstwhile apartheid government. Amongst those, for example, were countries like Malawi and Cote d'Ivoire, and to some extent Gabon, which benefited handsomely from some of the programs and projects that were implemented by the apartheid government in order to Comoros Island, Banks General, Equatorial Guinea, amongst others. There's quite a few. So some of these countries that had benefited in some symbolic projects which the apartheid government sought to use to divide African countries and to ensure that it had a bit of recognition from some of the African countries. course, post 94, we took a decision to establish the African Renaissance Fund, whose sole purpose was really to promote development, to promote peace on the African continent, and to help with institution and capacity building. And of course, you honourable members were kind enough to let that bill pass through Parliament through your unanimous support. We were able to use this bill, which is now an act, as a basis for our involvement on the African continent. And I must say, we've made a difference in a number of countries as a result of that. Our involvement in the Congo, our involvement in Burundi, our involvement in Sudan, particularly in the Darfur region, our programs and projects in Lesotho around the building of the dams in Lesotho, the rehabilitation of the infrastructure there, which has helped the movement, seamless movement of people and goods, the food security project in Guinea-Conakry, which has helped to assure and guarantee continuous food supply to the people of Guinea. I can name a lot. These are some of the projects that we've implemented since 1994, which have had a meaningful impact on the lives of African people, be it in terms of helping them to build and set up strong institutions of democracy, institutions of government, to promoting peace, security, and stabilizing their countries, right up to questions of food security and infrastructure development. But of course, one of the limitations or shortcomings we've noted is that we've never all the spheres of government, national, provincial, and local, have been involved in outbound development assistance, but this had not been coordinated. Some of the provinces have been doing work in terms of assisting sister regions and sister provinces in other countries through the twinning programs to help to build capacity, and also some of our municipalities have been involved in that kind of work, but there was no coordination between or amongst these tiers of government insofar as outbound development assistance is concerned. Also, there was no overall development cooperation policy. And indeed, we've now identified the need to plug into these gaps. And we think that SADPA presents us with the appropriate opportunity to attend to some of these coordination and policy gaps. Chairperson, we view development cooperation as an important instrument in promoting our objectives on the African continent, which resonates with that of the peoples of the continent. We seek to promote peace, we seek to promote stability, we seek to promote democracy, we seek to promote good governance. We seek to create conditions for these countries to develop and to prosper. We seek to create conditions for children to go to school, for the sick to receive medical health care, for young people to study, for people to work. So we seek, in keeping with the motto and the vision of our department, we seek to promote a peaceful, prosperous Africa that takes its rightful place in the community of nations. So these are the overall, these are the broad objectives of this development partnership agency. And we don't think that by entering into this sphere of foreign policy or interstate relations, we're necessarily transforming South Africa from being a developing to being a developed country, or more precisely, from being a donor nation. South Africa remains a development partner and not a donor country. We're not a donor country because we also have our own development challenges as a country. So we are not a donor country. We are not a developed country. We remain a developing country, but a developing country with a conscience that we have an obligation, we have a responsibility to assist where possible others that don't have the means that we have so that they can ameliorate their conditions. For instance, now we've deployed our divers to Tanzania to help recover some of the bodies following the disastrous sinking of the ship, of the ferry, off the coast of Dar es Salaam. That is not just an accident. That act is consistent with our overall foreign policy orientation, which seeks to assist where possible, where we can, those that don't have the means to help themselves. We've been asked now to help with the elections in the Congo. The Congo will be going into their second democratic elections in November this year. And we're one of those countries that have been requested to assist with various aspects of that election. Congo is a huge country with over 60 million people. We expect a voting population of over 20 million people spread throughout the country. And our IEC, our government has been requested to help, to assist with the organization, certain organizational aspects of that election. Current programs that were involved in the African include the African Resistance Fund, and of course I've mentioned the programs that are run by provincial and local some of the municipalities. We also have the IPSA Poverty Alleviation Fund, which we run together with our partners in the IPSA grouping, India, Brazil. We also engage multilateral donors and lending institutions such as the ADB, African Development Bank, and the World Bank. And of course, we distribute very handsome revenues to the SACU countries, our immediate neighbors in the region. Other South African agencies that are involved in the area of development cooperation and assistance are the funding institutions such as DBSA and IDC. They are also involved in development cooperation on the continent, largely in major infrastructure projects. Chairperson, I won't go into the details, but just to say we have done some early work on SADBA to make an assessment, and we asked the Treasury, National Treasury, which, as you know, still has the responsibility to manage all inbound development assistance. We ask Treasury because they have the capacity, because they have the expertise, they have the experience in managing billions of ODA, official development assistance that comes into South Africa. They did an extensive critique of the ARS, and of course out of that came out a number of findings and recommendations, which have helped us to model the South African Development Partnership Agency. We've also done a review of the of similar bodies in other countries. We sent out teams to a number of countries: France, the UK, Nordics, New Zealand, and of course USA. We looked at all countries, both developed and developing, just to get a sense of how they organize their, how they manage their development cooperation. And out of that, we came out with very useful lessons, which have helped us to predicate the whole concept of SADMA. The conceptual framework that we developed was approved by Cabinet in 2009. And essentially, a Cabinet decision is that SADMA must be an entity within DICO. So it's not going to be outside of DICO. It will be established in terms of the Public Service Act, staffed by a combination of diplomats and technical experts. We still have to give some more attention to the financial arrangements. The task resorts within the task of establishing SADMA resorts within the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. We are currently working on proposals and models for the operationalization of SADMA, having looked at a number of elements. The guiding principles that we focus will be on the integration rather than initiating a new process, given that SADMA, as we said, is a successor to the ARS. And it will be established through a bill that will come before this August assembly. And of course, it will repeal the existing ARS Act. SADMA will need systems and processes to engage in complex funding and financial procurement arrangements. And these will be the responsibility of SADMA itself and not DICO, because SADMA will have its own administrative capacity to be able to manage its programs, its projects, and also its finances. Chairperson, the proposal is to retain the 3A the Schedule 3A status, which is the public entity status for SADMA, for the SADMA fund. So just like the ARF, the current ARF, SADMA will also be governed in accordance with the existing Schedule 3A of our constitution. We hope that members will agree with the step of repealing the ARF, because this is critical. We have to repeal the ARF in order to create the SADMA fund bill. And of course, after that, we'll then set up the board of trustees. I'll come back to this later, which will ensure, together with the management and administration of SADMA, that SADMA is managed in accordance with accepted principles and standards of good governance, financial management, and procurement principles. SADMA will also be established as a government component for purposes of administration of the fund. It will be a separate component within the ministerial portfolio. The minister will delegate the oversight responsibility to one of the deputy ministers, policy direction and oversight will be provided by TICO, and the head of the of SAD by itself will be its accounting officer. The DG of TICO will not be the accounting officer for SADBA, but the head of SADBA will be the accounting officer for SADBA. So as a result of that, SADBA will have to issue out its own annual report and also present this to Parliament. It will be audited as an independent entity by the Auditor General, who will issue out his report or his findings based on his assessment of its use of public and other funds that are placed at its disposal for discharging its mandate. The next slide is just a graphical explanation of what I've just mentioned. Where you have at the top there the Minister of TICO, and of course you've got the line going down, you have the DG of TICO, you also have the head of SADBA. The head of SADBA is accountable to the board of trustees, who are appointed by the Minister of TICO. There's a minimum of 7, maximum of 15 members of the board that can be appointed by the Minister of TICO. So SADBA will be a government component. It will operate squarely within the framework of government. It won't be an independent entity, but it will be within the framework of government, and it will also be governed by Schedule 3A. As I've mentioned, the next slide is just an indication of the process that has to be followed in order to establish a government component, which I think the members are fairly familiar with. I won't bore you with that detail. And the next slides deal with the draft SADBA and the SADBA fund bill. Chairperson, you will note that some of the slides I'm going to deal with have already alluded to elements therein, so I will not go into that detail.
Chairperson and Ambassador, sorry, I'm just suggesting that before we go to the draft fund bill, can you move with us by clearing certain questions on the first phase, and then because the bill now will be more technical, but we must understand the rationale of introducing this. I'm just suggesting that. I'd like to ask questions from what he has already presented.
I think let's proceed that way. Thank you, General. Ambassador, just hold your horses right there before we get to that, and let's engage on the issues thus far. Okay, General.
Chairperson, one would be curious to know as to whether there will be closer relationship between the African Renaissance position of the country, or are we doing away with that concept altogether? And I believe that African Renaissance institution, which was established by this house and your department, is a strong brand, is still needed. I'm a little bit worried when you say if you say now you're going to do away with African Renaissance Fund, what is the position of African Renaissance Institution? Are you changing this just for the sake of
changing it, or you say, all right, it was done by Mr. X, therefore it's irrelevant. We want to do it our own thing. Is it not going to be more expensive? And so clarify that. The truth of the matter is that the South African monies have been going out of this country for many years without people knowing what national interest are we pushing. So it would be good that later on when you explain this to the House, what national interest are we targeting exactly? Because to just dole out millions and millions of rands without being accounted for on the other side, the population can still ask some questions. Why are you becoming a Father Christmas without asking who is accountable on the other side, given the history of many countries in the continent who have been supported by developed countries, but failed to account on those funds? What mechanisms are we going to put in place? So those are the gray areas you need to come up with so that we can support your bill. But if this thing is just changed to spite the former president, and then now it's going to be difficult to sell it. Are we still on the African Renaissance, or are we doing away with it? A simple, straightforward answer.
Okay, thank you. I've noted Honorable Jacobus, then Honorable Mukhalafa, then Honorable Boy.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question was actually posed by the General, the issue around accountability of monies that are going out of the country, from ourselves. My second question would be, and maybe it's a bit of detail, and I'm not sure if it's addressed in the bill, I haven't seen it. I think it's on the fourth page, the pages are not numbered, on the fourth slide, where we deal with the current programs, which include the African Renaissance Fund and others. The IPSA Poverty Alleviation Fund, I'm particularly interested to know what are the programs around that fund? Where does the money go to? Has money gone out? What are the kind of programs that is being funded by the IPSA Poverty Alleviation Fund? Because poverty is a great problem within our country and indeed within the sub-region and the continent. So if one can just get maybe one or two examples of, programs that this fund funds.
Thanks very much, Chair. Let me also just say, to add on what Honorable Holomis has said, and just ask on the issue of NEPAD, because of it's the arm of the African Renaissance, what would be the process with NEPAD? Because I believe it's an institution. It's even got a secretariat who's running it. So are we creating centers of power in Africa here? The other issue here, it's in terms of the criteria to be used. What criteria is going to be used to assess which country qualifies for that donation? And the second one is the issue of the best practice model. Which model did you finally settle on, and why? Is it from a developing country or from a developed country, and why did you settle on that model? And the other one is the issue of, I think, monitoring and implementation. It's been a thorny issue with us when it came to the ARF to say that you've got this fund and nobody knows what is happening. Even the Auditor General raised questions and he came to us and said, the committee, please assist me. How do we make sure that the ARF is accountable, because of it's always money going out, and we want you to have a bigger oversight on what happens there. I accept the thing that the AG and will be monitoring, they will be giving us annual report, but we need to have checks and balances. You've mentioned the other issue of coordination of donors between local, provincial and national spheres of government. How will that part try and coordinate that? Because of it's been always a problem to say anything that happens in international relations from local government, provincial and national is uncoordinated. So how will SADC coordinate all those efforts? And am I correct to ascertain that you are saying all these programs that you have alluded to, the IPSA, the ARF, are all going to be consolidated under SADPA? And the last one is on the process of the appointment of the board. You're talking about 7 to 15 members, and the remuneration will be on the executive and the secretariat. What will be the process on the appointment of the board? Is it the normal one that we know when, for example, the Minister of Public Enterprise appoints the board of Transnet, or will it be a different type of process that you are following? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Boy.
Thank you, Ambassador. Quite clearly, you are bringing something that needs a lot of thinking. You see, recently with the Arab countries, with the Arab Revolution, if you look at the Libyan part of the solution, the IMF moved in after they have collapsed the country. This is the context that we are moving from in South Africa. What is it that you are defining as development? Is it that you first crush that country, get it down, and then you bring money to rebuild it? Is that the approach? Is that what informs our approach? What is it that you, or are we going back to the big daddy scenario where we become big daddies, giving handouts, trying to build roads for them, and they are seated on the periphery as observers? And sometimes you need them in the UN so that they can vote with you. Is that what is informing South Africa in this particular approach? What informs us? Give us some sense of exactly what is informing our position, because within that changing environment, really, I mean, because I don't hear you talking about, I mean, one of the things that you have to accept is that China has got a bigger role in the African continent. I mean, clearly, whilst you were with us here arguing the Libyan question, quite clearly we've been shown a finger in our face, but I mean, big developing countries have dealt totally different with it. They've moved in, they're putting in resources. What is our approach? What really puts you under pressure to bring this bill in front of us now? Is that what, it's because of that changing scenario around the African continent? Is it the matters of decolonization? Are we becoming the new colonizers in Africa? Or who is the colonizer now? What are we combating? I mean, you know, I don't get the sense of that when you put in an organogram, when you monitor, it comes back to what one honorable member is saying. What is that informed? What is the criteria that we are looking for? That takes us, is it, because the election work, we've been doing it quite, since 1994, we've been intervening and helping in this election work. So what is really putting us under pressure now? I don't also have, you see, I can see in the organogram, you have the private sector. But if you do development work without and properly spelling out where does the private sector fit in within your work that you're going to do, it does create a little bit of a wrong perception that this government would want to become a big daddy on its own, take the taxpayers' money and use it as much as it can. Is that the approach I'm really trying to get them figure out? What is it that South Africa is looking for? You suppose also you can't continue harping on that we were there as a national liberation movement and now we must help these countries. If that is what we're going to build in into the 21st century, then that does present a little bit of a bigger debate, that is it from where we're moving from, a sympathetic point of approach, that we're being sympathetic to the DRC. I mean, lessons learned it would be like when the peacekeeping missions was in the DRC, when we finished, the first people to move in after that stability were the Americans. They established their own institutions. Is it what they're looking for? You know, I'm a little bit concerned about the contextualization of our approach, that what informs this, so that I can also work freely with you as you're giving and spelling out. And as the general has been clearly showing, that there's been some institutions created before. Are we saying those institutions are irrelevant?
world.
What is our approach? You know, as a country, we need to be more clearer in how we deal with it. What would also concerns me, you know, it's good for members of parliament to create PAP. But when that Pan-African parliament gets eroded by the type of approaches that are being taken and itself being put aside, what implication does it have? Does it say that members of parliament within those countries can't cooperate and assist with the creation of these type of institutions? Or was PAP is ineffectively not being used effectively by ourselves as people are supposed to assist those type of institutions? What do you think about that role? So for me, a number of questions are just coming up, but because you are quite learned, Honorable Ambassador, I know you'll be able to help me. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Foy. Now, let me just add one or two. Ambassador, let me add one or two. What would be the posture of SADC? Will it be a tool of foreign policy to advance our national interests, as correctly pointed out by one of the members? Or will it be a tool to advance what would otherwise be seen as our altruistic, you know, approach to matters? We are well known to have invested heavily all over the African continent, but for altruistic purposes, with no clearly defined national interest objectives that we seek to achieve. So in that context, is Ambassador Nguma. So really, I think that's the one question. You see, your slide, the slide that you have on there, says that it's a vehicle to advance South African foreign policy to address challenges of poverty and blah, blah in Africa and the South. Now, to me, Ambassador, there's a problem with that statement. It can't be the objective of our foreign policy to address challenges in Africa. We're not a big daddy, big brother, you know, that goes around with a bag full of money and address the problems in Africa and so on. Our perspective has always been, since the democratic breakthrough, that our own development in South Africa is linked to that of Africa in the South. Right. And in that context, we then see our development as our own development moving forward, you know, moving in tandem. You know, interestingly, I was in Lesotho last week, and one of the issues that you know was flagged by the Basotho, especially the ruling party in that country, was that, you know, how is it possible that Lesotho is plagued by underdevelopment and poverty and so on, and we have this filthy rich neighbor, South Africa, you know? So therefore you must throw open the borders, you know? You must throw open the borders between South Africa and Lesotho. So the point is that South Africa has a role. We understand our role as such, you know, in the context of the developments, not only of South Africa, but linked to that of SADC and the African continent and so on and so on. But you see, to me, the proposition there, at least the emphasis, is problematic in the sense that it creates this impression that, you know, we go around and address problems in Africa and the global South when we do not have the resources nor the capacity to do so. So that's the first question, Ambassador. The second one is
there's this statement that South Africa is not a donor country. Now, again, maybe it's a question of emphasis. Donor and development partner. You know, at a conceptual level, you know, at a conceptual level, what's the difference really? You know, is it the difference between people being at the center of their own development and development brought to people? Is it that kind of, you know, question of emphasis on you know, the approach? And then perhaps lastly, you know, SADPA will be established in terms of the Public Service Act. What does it mean? You know, how different will it be from any other entity that we know? There's the question of the Board of Trustees. Now, I can tell you now, Ambassador, I can tell you now, if the intention is to set up a Board of Trustees, yes, and create a separate entity that will account to Parliament on its own, we have seen those, they do not work. They are full of problems. You go from IDT to CIDB, you go to all of them. I mean, you will know, for instance, that the Minister of Public Enterprises is trying to cap the salaries of these entities, you know, that report to, of course, to his department. But the point is, our experience as MPs, and I'm sure, I mean, we serve in various committees, those entities are problematic. I wonder, and perhaps I need to understand why, you know, you chose that path, why you chose to set up the structure in, you know, with what, I mean, it doesn't work. I can tell you now. More than anything, these entities consume more resources for operational costs than they do on the actual, you know, and infighting among themselves. And so, I mean, I'm just saying, Ambassador, those are our experiences, you know, as we deal with these entities on a daily basis. So is it perhaps an option that you're looking at? Because what would, well, at least to me, what would make sense, or one of the other things that you could look at, is rather to create a division under one of the DDGs, you know, who will then with, you know, as you have it currently, your DDG Africa, blah, 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 you know, and work with it perhaps differently. I mean, that's one suggestion, if you wish, but surely there's a number of other ways that you could. So why this, you know, it's problematic, Ambassador. You know, I, Mandi Beg Ngolflo, he and Abana Masikis, you know, when I saw this, it's concerning to say the least. Yeah, thanks. Any other before you? Okay, Ambassador, it's your local.
No, I was just saying to the Honourable Olomis, in the SA, in the Defence Force, we've got a department, now we've got the military veterans. It started so small, today it's got a DJ. They are fighting, I don't want to hear about the story. It started very small, no, just going to be a small department, DJ there. Today he wants a chair, he wants a table. Everything is done. He is sweating left and right. Out of his commission, just playing that
Well, thanks very much, Chairperson, and let me thank the honourable members for the very useful observations and comments they've made. We will attempt, myself and Shweb here, to respond to the questions that have been posed, starting with the questions perception of the relationship between SADBA and the African Renaissance. There is a very strong relationship between the two. In fact, as I mentioned, SADBA is the successor, or it will be the successor to the current African Renaissance Fund. The establishment of SADBA will represent the next phase of our engagement on the African continent within the framework of the African Renaissance Fund. So the African Renaissance Fund, that philosophy, the concept of the African Renaissance Fund remains the philosophical foundation. It remains the conceptual, intellectual foundation of SADBA. There is no dichotomy. There is no contestation, or there is no difference between what the African Renaissance Fund sought to achieve and what SADBA.
It's just a change of name.
But it's more than just a change of name. It's more than just a change of name, in the sense that with SADBA we envisage to establish an institutional framework, administrative framework, and I'll come back to the issues around the Board of Trustees and all that. So we hope we envisage to establish proper governance and administrative structures which are going to manage the affairs of SADBA with the oversight of the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. But also SADBA will not just rely on appropriations from Parliament. It will also rely on donor funding from some of the multilateral, bilateral donors who will bring in money into SADBA for purposes of implementing projects on the African continent in the form of trilateral or multilateral cooperation with those donors. So it won't just be a fund whose activities will solely depend on the appropriations from Parliament. Of course, those will make the seed capital, as it were, for the fund. But the fund will be much bigger than the existing ARF. So there is a very strong relationship between SADBA and the African Renaissance concept, philosophy, because the African Renaissance philosophy or concept is predicated on the notion of helping, contributing to Africa's development, Africa's growth, through a number of initiatives. So General, I would like to put you at ease that there is no intention to depart from that original intent, but instead we're taking this intent to the next level, and we think the correct vehicle to do that is SADBA.
Sorry, Chairperson. Yeah. Where you are failing to failing me on this issue is, for instance, why did you not beef up the African Renaissance Fund with all these governance theories you are presenting to us? What circumstances which led you to change from African Renaissance Fund to this? You have not yet explained to us, so that we support you in this bill in the House. If we in this committee we don't understand your rationale, it's going to be difficult for us to sell this. So all what we want to know, when you discuss this African Renaissance Fund, which is a strong brand, and which I'm sure even other countries in the continent accepted, that you are not being seen as a big brother, But this is a fund for Africa, although we know that we are controlling it. But it just take us into your confidence, exactly, so that you remove these fears which I had earlier on referred to.
No, thanks. Thanks.
Ambassador, maybe he said, look, we have not handled correctly the outgoing phase of the former president, Comrade Thabo. And we had signaled as if there are tensions within the country in how we dealt with that relationship. And even in now, in general terms, when you see the President Zuma going to a particular mission, you see him arriving, African countries continue getting confused that what is happening in that country, why these two individuals are treated differently. This one is a president, this is a former president. Is there a continuous infighting? Are you able to deal with that motive in the setting up of this fund? Are you able to say this is not what informs us not to move along with African Renaissance? Is it because we're skeptical of Thabo's leadership or not? Can you clarify that? Can you walk or take us through? Are you in there in the foreign mission? Are you doubtful about that relationship? What is it? So that some people who could all have confidence that they are not moving away from the African Renaissance because you doubt Comrade Thabo's leadership, or you have got, you are skeptical of the first former president, or you think there's something that he has done that maybe this parliament is not informed about. Just take us away from it, if there is something wrong or right.
Well, thanks very much. Maybe let me start with the last question. And just to say that I'm a humble civil servant, and I do not pretend to be what I'm not. So elements of your question would be better addressed at the appropriate level. I can only answer those questions that are within my mandate as a humble civil servant. And just to again reaffirm that the concept of the African Renaissance is very much embedded, it's rooted in our foreign policy. Our literature, all our literature, whether it's the current white paper that will come and brief you about the draft, as it were, or the annual report of the department, or even the yearbook of government, constantly refers to the concept of the African Renaissance. So there is no intent in any way to decapitate or to remove or efface that concept. That concept is very much rooted in our literature and also in our programs. I think the just to go back to the areas that the general was raising, we're looking at that, but really broader than Africa. SATPA will not be limited to Africa geographically. It will also assist in dealing with some of the questions. For example, we've had to engage in Haiti. We've had to engage in Haiti. We've had to engage in Cuba. We've had to engage in East Timor. Now these are small states, weak states, which have got much more deeper challenges than some of the African countries. And of course, we've engaged in those within the context broad rubric of South-South cooperation. which is a key plank of our foreign policy. So African Renaissance is subsumed within that broad rubric of development partnership. It is not jettisoned, but it is subsumed within that. And its main focus is within the geographical entity of Africa, where we're looking at those issues of peace, of security, of development. Because we've said, as the chair indeed correctly pointed out, that South Africa's future, South Africa's destiny is intertwined with that of the rest of the continent. And I will move into to answering the question of national interest, that our definition of national interest transcends the classical philosophical definition of national interest, which looks purely at what is in it, for South Africa. We're not just looking at what is in it. There's a modern doctrine of national interest, which incorporates those elements that take place elsewhere, which may also impact on your own national interest. And that is the new paradigm of national interest that South Africa has embraced. Kofi Annan spoke about this in 2005, 2006. I think Tony Blair articulated it when he was Prime Minister of the UK. Bill Clinton also articulated it, which sought to allow those countries and organizations to take an active role, an active part in events that happen outside of their geographical spheres of influence, largely because they view those events as having an indirect impact, as likely to be having an indirect collateral impact on their own development. Now, we can take the classical case of the DRC, for example. We did not get into the DRC for egalitarian reasons, but we got into the DRC purely because we're pursuing our national interests as a country. To the extent that the Congo was involved in a long fratricidal war whose implications could result in the outflow of inflow of migrants into South Africa, whose impact could result into the flow of small arms, light weapons into South Africa, and therefore disturb South Africa's own newfound democracy and peace. That to us constituted a serious threat to our own national interest. So our definition of national interest is broadly within that rubric. To the extent that there is a continued ongoing instability in Zimbabwe has a serious impact on South Africa, and we've already seen it. Of course, scribes argue about the numbers, but certainly millions of Zimbabweans are here in South Africa. These are largely economic migrants, people who have left that place to come and make a living here in South Africa. And of course, impacting on our own limited resources. And of course, creating all kinds of difficulties for South Africa. So our president is involved in helping to mediate the issue of Zimbabwe, getting the parties to commit to the global political agreement and all that, largely because we're pursuing, that is partly because we're pursuing a national interest in Zimbabwe. So the classical dichotomy between what constitutes a national interest and what you do for egalitarian or altruistic purposes no longer exists, unfortunately, in 21st century international relations. National interest far transcend geographic spheres of influence, and they can no longer only be defined in terms of pure economic interests. But they should be defined broadly. And this is the new perspective of national interest that South Africa has adopted chairperson, which therefore explains why we need SADPA. We need SADPA as an instrument to articulate that interest. SADPA should help to contribute to development. It should create possibilities for South Africa to fully explore the potential that exists on the African continent. By deploying SADPA resources in a country like Guinea-Conakry, for example, will create a lot of goodwill amongst the Guineans, and it creates subjective conditions for the entry or involvement of South African interests in Guinea, whether these are commercial, whether these are civil society, whether these are largely people-to-people, but it creates those conditions, subjective conditions for engagement of the various sectors of South African society to engage in a wide range of programs and activities of human endeavor. So that is our understanding of national interest and the location of SADPA within that framework of national interest. Countries that have got aspirations like South Africa, countries that see their role beyond their immediate borders, establish institutions akin to SADPA in order to pursue those aspirations and those interests. And South Africa is not an exception. We are a country that has got aspirations. We're a country that has got a role to play in so far as promoting our values, promoting democracy, promoting human rights, promoting good governance, promoting peace, promoting development. This is what South Africa is about. This is what our constitution is about. These are the values that we're promoting globally. And there's no way you can promote those values if you don't have the means, the wherewithal to do that. Of course, we're not saying that South Africa will make the world change, but South Africa will make a contribution, will help to make a contribution for countries to deal with the challenges that they face. And that is what we're saying, Chairperson. What is the position of the ARF? So as I've mentioned, ARF, in our view, will be subsumed within SADPA. What is the national interest we're pursuing? I think we've tried to address that. What mechanisms of accountability are we putting in place? General, we will come back to those questions when we deal with the contents of the bill itself as to the mechanisms of accountability with regards to SADPA. Honorable Jacobus, the IPSA Poverty Alleviation Fund, what are the details? The IPSA Poverty Alleviation Fund is a trilateral arrangement between India, Brazil, and South Africa, which basically seeks to help some of the weak countries, the LDCs in particular, in the Caribbean, in Asia, and also in Africa to address their challenges. So far, through the IPSA fund, we've managed to help Sierra Leone to develop a rice and vegetable growing project, which has helped to contribute to poverty alleviation. We're also doing a similar plan to do a similar project in Burundi, and also there's a health cooperation project that we've put in place in Sierra Leone with the participation of Cuban doctors who were deployed in Sierra Leone to help to deal with the challenges there. Sierra Leone has got the highest rate of infant mortality rates and the highest rates of maternal mortality rates. I think the last time I checked, the percentage or the ratio of gynecologists to women or pregnant women was the lowest in the world in Sierra Leone. So these projects are helping, they are contributing to change meaningfully the lives of people in these countries. There's no intention, sorry. IPSA. Now, as I say, it's targeted mainly at the LDCs, really poor countries. Yes, least developed countries. Yes.
The project is Haiti.
Yes.
The Honorable Jacobo says, well, there are pockets of least developed areas in South Africa. Can I suggest something here? I know that the department said, well, we are here just to inform you. We are still going to come back and so on. I think there are certain areas where we may have to engage the political head of the department. So that before we go to substantive issues, we sit down with the minister and clarify this issue of national interest vis-a-vis the questions we've asked earlier on. And also you mentioned that there is a white paper. So this institution you are creating, it would have fitted well if you had a white paper first. And then you say this is how the foreign policy of this country is going to be driven. From now on, we are going to have SATCO, whatever. And then the relation between this and the African Renaissance and NEPAD is going to be ABCD. Why I'm raising this is because the foreign policy of this country, as opposition parties, we have been applying a non-partisan approach because we were briefed and we bought into it, to this policy. But now, when it's willy-nilly, then you see a document changing the policy, which will have an impact. It means now we must go and do our own research. These documents, well, that I got them this morning, there's no way that I will do justice in contributing meaningfully. But I have a right to say, at face value, we're going to have a problem. Let's have the minister, we engage the minister, and then we can say, all right, bring the documents. Because you have said it yourself that there are certain questions you cannot ask. These are politicians, and they represent certain constituencies. So we have to answer these questions. So if this is the position of the government and the cabinet, so on, let the minister come and tell us, then we engage him. So, for instance, you look at there are so many questions which we need to ask. President Mandela once said that there's no country in the world which will tell us who our friends would be. No one will choose friends for us. Then our foreign policy was underpinned by observation of human rights and so on, in line with our constitution. But when you have people like Dalai Lama who wants to come into South Africa, well-known activists on human rights, then no, you cannot come here. Somewhere a country seemed to be having veto powers to say, no, if you do this to Dalai Lama, we won't give you that. No. We are compromising this country in a big way. We need the minister to come here, and then the next is the white paper, and then these institutions can follow. Not before that. Otherwise, we are going to create a big confusion.
That's fine. Thank you, General. Honorable members, let's... Ambassador Ngosi was still in the process of responding to the questions. So let's proceed, get those responses, and take it from there.
Well, thanks very much, Chairperson. So the IPSA, therefore, the IPSA looks at the criteria is that the countries that are beneficiaries should be LDCs, Honorable Jacobus. The countries should be LDCs. So South Africa is not classified as an LDC internationally. Honorable Mokgalapa, what is the relationship with Nepal? Indeed, there is a symbiotic relationship between SADPA, or rather there ought to be that relationship once SADPA is established, between it and other structures or institutions that seek to promote development on the African continent. So there will be this symbiotic relationship. In fact, SADPA will also strike strategic partnerships with institutions such as the ADB, the African Development Bank. It will also strike strategic partnerships with the RECs, regional economic communities on the African continent, ECOWAS, IGAD, CIMAC in Central Africa, ECA in East Africa. So it will strike those strategic partnerships. So the relationship is complementary, it's symbiotic, and it seeks to reinforce the development agenda of the African continent. The criteria to assess the country which qualifies, I think these matters will be determined by the board, as well as the SADPA administration. They will determine the criteria. But we've set the broad criteria. SADPA will engage in projects that seek to advance and promote development, peace, stability, security on the continent, projects that seek to promote capacity and institution building, projects that seek to promote and reinforce democracy and good governance. So the broad criteria is similar to the one that is there currently in the ARF Act, which the honourable members had approved a few years ago. Honourable Mokgalapa, we've explored a number of models, and I won't go into the details of that, but we've explored models of a structure, a development agency that is located within the department. We've explored that. We've explored the model of development agencies that are independent of the department, such as, for example, we've looked at the Canadian model. We've looked at the American model, USAID. We've looked at the French, the Swedes, and all that. All these development agencies have almost an autonomous, independent existence to the government. So what we went for was a hybrid, really a hybrid, a model that seeks to retain SADPA within government, within department, but at the same time make sure that it is unencumbered by the bureaucracy, so that there can be a quick process, a very swift process of decision making. Otherwise, if you were to put SADPA firmly under the structures of the department, then of course it is subjected to the same bureaucratic rigor and processes that any other government memorandum or whatever goes through, and it won't therefore be able to be swift in terms of its decision making process. So we looked at a model that seeks to balance between the two extremes, a model that is firmly within government, that's one, and another that is outside of government. So really, SADPA is the SADPA model we're presenting is a hybrid between those.
To make it easy for the money to go out of the council.
Well, still you have the board of the board of trustees who have to approve. They have to approve, and the accountability processes, as we have mentioned, SATPA will be subjected to accountability here in Parliament and also through the AG. So there are very strict and tight measures that we've put in place to ensure that there's accountability in terms of the use of the funding. Yeah. Okay. Monitoring and implementation, I think we've addressed part of that, and we'll address it later when we look at the detail. How will SATPA coordinate efforts of provincial and local authorities? As soon as SATPA is established, we intend to bring together to establish a forum that will coordinate outbound development assistance and make sure that there's information sharing, so that you don't have a parallel initiatives or initiatives that are duplicated between the various tiers of government to specific countries. So we're going to establish that structure as soon as SATPA is in place. That will actually force, in a way, municipalities and provincial governments that engage in this activity to ensure that what they are doing is aligned with the overall programs and objectives of SATPA, and is even subsumed within SATPA itself.
Would it be a legal binding document or just an MOU sort of? How will you structure it? Because you say you force our government to be structured to be legally binding.
We'll explore that. We'll explore that, honourable member. But that is the intention. In terms of the will the project be consolidated? As I mentioned, IPSA will continue to exist as its own. It's an independent fund, so it won't be consolidated into the SATPA. It will exist as an independent fund. But of course, we hope that SATPA will complement, that the two institutions will also complement each other. But you need to understand that IPSA is a trilateral funding mechanism, while SATPA is a bilateral funding mechanism. The process of appointing the board will deal with that, but just to say that the members of the board, particularly those who are government employees and all that, they won't get any remuneration. They won't get any remuneration. In fact, even the cost of the members will not be based on a commission. On commercial rates, but the members will be reimbursed for the cost they incur coming into meetings and all that. But this is not a typical corporate, it's not a typical corporate board like a telecom or Eskom board or SAA board. It's actually different, far from that. Honorable Boy, what is our approach definition of development? Again, I think these are questions that General Holomisa, as he has counseled, should be further pursued at the appropriate level. But I can just indicate that from our perspective, we look at South Africa as a development partner, that it has to partner with African countries in order to promote and to advance development on the African continent in various fields, politics, economics, as well as in the area of social development. So this is where we look at our role as a department. The role of the private sector, we think the private sector has got an important role to play. In fact, when the minister delivered her budget vote speech this year, she underscored the importance of private actors who have got to be mobilized to help to support our foreign policy goals on the African continent. So she underscored the role of these actors, non-state actors. That was the concept or the phrase that she used. we look at the role of the private sector within the broad framework of the non-state actors. And we think they've got to come to the party in so far as SASPA is concerned. They are free to make contributions in kind or in cash to SASPA so that SASPA can implement its programs. They are also free to deploy experts, technical experts, in various fields. For example, if SASPA decides to assist the Central African Republic, which has got a serious problem insofar as revenue collection is concerned, and if some of those expertise lie in some of our financial institutions, banks and all that, would expect these institutions to make to volunteer expertise, which we can put together with people from the revenue services who can go to Bangui in the Central African Republic and help them to set up a revenue collection institution in that country, which will contribute to the sustenance of that government. So I'm just making that example that people from APSA or Standard Bank who've got expertise in issues of revenue, tax and all that could, for example, be crafted into a multidisciplinary team of SASPA that goes to Bangui to help with that. So we look at the role of the private sector, not only insofar as them donating or putting in cash in SASPA, but we also look at them playing a role in kind insofar as availing expertise for various activities of SASPA. Chair, your questions, what will be the posture of SASPA? Will it advance South Africa's national interest, I think we've or altruistic interest? We try to deal with that question, but I think it will be raised also at the appropriate forum. Difference between donor and development partner, the conceptual difference. Well, donor countries are traditionally developed countries, OECD countries in the main. These are donor countries. All OECD members are developed countries, with the exception of the new entrants like Korea, South Korea, Mexico. But also South Korea has made such incredible advances that it now falls within the realm of developed country, though officially it has not yet been classified as such. But it has made tremendous strides. You no longer talk about absolute poverty in a country like South Korea. So it's no longer a developing country as other developing countries of the South are. So all OECD countries are known as donor countries. I think Mexico is now a member, but Mexico has just joined recently. Mexico associated with the OECD a few years back. It was given an associate membership status. In fact, it started first as an observer, then associate member, and now full member. But Mexico has got its own development challenges. They have taken a political decision as a country that they would like to be associated and described as such, as a donor country. We do not want that because we realize that, as Honorable Jacobus was saying, there's still a huge development challenge in South Africa. A lot of people in South Africa still live in conditions of abject poverty. So we are not in the same. No, it's the WTO. It's only the WTO that recognizes South Africa as a, yes, but all the other multilateral bodies regard us as a developing country. And that was a mistake that came out as a result of the negotiation of the trade agreement. What was that? After GATT. Anyway, I forgot the name of the trade, but it was a multilateral trade agreement, not just involving South Africa. Before the TDCA, not the American. No, before the Doha round. So we are not a developing country, except for that trade agreement that was negotiated in 1994, which erroneously placed South Africa in the category So, Chair, that is the conceptual difference. SATPA Public Service Act, I think we'll deal with that question later. Chair, I thought I should just answer those. I know I've received a note from you that we should just summarize the SATPA fund bill and not go into the detail because of time, and we'll try to do that. I'll ask my colleague, Shweb, just to do a summary, not to go into the detail. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much, TDG. Please proceed.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Just to clarify one point on the provincial and the local structures and their development cooperation. With the draft bill, or with the SATPA bill, it makes provision that sort of the SATPA will coordinate all South African outgoing development cooperation work, which means that there will be a legal obligation then on the provinces and the local government to coordinate their work with through SATPA. It might not happen in year one, but in subsequent years it will be required. The bill has three basic elements to it, aside from the preamble where it looks at the overall the rationale for establishing SATPA. It deals with the establishment of the agency, SATPA, as a component of government under the minister's portfolio, and discusses its objectives, which are essentially to coordinate and implement South Africa's development, outgoing development cooperation systems or programs, and secondly, that it will administer the SATPA fund, which is a separate legal entity. The remainder of the bill deals with the fund itself, the establishment of the fund, the possibility of what monies it can receive, the financial arrangements governing that, the functions of the fund, and then the governance structures of the fund with the Board of Trustees and the role and the functions of the Board of Trustees and their administration of that fund. We think that for the fund is going to be the most important issue because it is where the money resides. So the governance structures under the fund must be quite strong. And so we've created strong institutional arrangements around the fund itself. We've also created a possibility for the minister, if required, to appoint an actuary. If SATPA is involved in complex and what they call exotic financial arrangements for joint ventures and profit sharing arrangements and revenue sharing arrangements to projects, especially if you think of areas of risk finance and those kind of things, then on an annual basis one needs to have a good measure of the value or the worth of those projects so that we can look at the financial viability of SATPA. We do not want SATPA to get into a position where it overextends its risk profile and then the fund is in trouble. So we've created mechanisms within the bill for the minister to appoint an actuary if so required. And then the last part of the bill deal was merely the repeal of the ARF to create the SATPA fund. The important things to note on the fund are that the SATPA will be able to receive monies into the SATPA fund directly from a foreign donor. At the moment, one of the major challenges with the ARF is that money goes to National Treasury. So, in a donor account, say for example, the Germans are giving money for South Africa and they're giving money for trilateral cooperation in the DRC, for example. That whole envelope reflects in their budget as money is given to South Africa. So it looks like South Africa is getting a bigger share of ODA, when actually part of that money is allocated to for trilateral cooperation outside of South Africa. And the international donors have approached South Africa on several occasions to say, can you please change this arrangement? Because we cannot, it wrongly reflects on their side. And it's one of the reasons why we need to create a separate SATPA fund. And we needed to repeal the ARF. So there are those kind of arrangements that SATPA is able to do. It's able to also look at investing money that it has not used on an annual basis. With concurrence from and advice from the Minister of Finance, so that monies that are not used on any particular year can be invested appropriately and then used as required. So it has those kind of arrangements as well in the bill. So in short, in just a brief overview, that's what the bill is about.
I think that's all from us from the side of the table, the Chairperson. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you so much. What's this? Shape.
It's Mr. Shwebe Kasu.
Shwebe Kasu.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. No. Thank you so much for the brief overview. Honourable members, any question to the latter part, the overview specifically? None at this point. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, it's not a question, Chair. I'm just saying to give us an opportunity, like the Honourable Boy is saying, to go through the bill itself so that when you finally come and present the detail of the bill, we at least have a sense of what it's about. But it could, that certainly does give us an opportunity to go into it better.
No. What the member said is this will give us an overview, just an insight into what to expect. We will engage with it as we receive the documents. We will engage with it further in anticipation of a follow up engagement on the bill going forward. Ambassador, I don't know anything from your side at this stage before I wrap up the meeting. Okay. No, thank you, the ambassador and your team. For the sterling work once more to clarify some of these complex issues to us, your efforts at giving us an insight are really duly appreciated and noted. Honourable members, this gives us an opportunity to engage on the information. I think we are in the unique position that even before the bill is formally tabled, we have some insights into it, and which, of course, enables us to engage with it thoroughly, at least on the basis of some initial understanding of what the underlying principles and underlying rationale is around some of these issues. I thank you so much. Perhaps I should just highlight that the. We will be engaging with the bill when it is formally tabled, and hopefully the minister will be here to engage on the political issues, especially engage on the political issues surrounding this prospective piece of legislation. You will recall that we have engaged on SATPA in the past. This is not our very first engagement on this issue. We have had a couple of briefings on SATPA and so on. So it's not a totally new concept. But I think really now that it's beginning to take shape, it inevitably raises a number of questions, some of the things that may not have been so clear when we were just talking about it in a vacuum, so to speak. But we appreciate the efforts made. We are also excited about this white paper on foreign policy. Once we've received it, or once it's been formally tabled in Parliament and it's processed through to us, we will engage with it as well. I tend to agree with the General here that these two are inextricably intertwined. They may not be the same, but they are inextricably intertwined and should be looked at in conjunction to one another, and not as two completely separate issues. So yes, honourable members, thank you so much, and the meeting is adjourned.
Okay, before you adjourn,
yes,
are you taking it as a formal committee resolution that you would want to see the minister before the bill is being processed in Parliament? Because of surely those political issues that we've raised, we cannot entertain the bill technically before we deal with the minister. And you are raising a very fundamental point of the white paper. I think this is an opportunity to make our foreign policy to be coherent, because of the white paper should inform what SADC should do. So I would appeal that we take a formal resolution that we have the minister come, maybe deal with the white paper and SADC simultaneously, or however, but we got to have the minister before the bill is formally tabled.
Look, well,
the one technical difficulty with taking a resolution is that we do not constitute a quorum. Right, so we can't take a formal resolution. However, we'll leave it with the department to engage their minister and request the minister that, you know, there has been some issues that they believe that the committee want to raise with them. I will also extend an invitation to the minister from my side as chair to request the minister to, you know, to attend a meeting of the committee. You will appreciate, of course, that the minister, I mean, we tried last week. The minister was supposed to be here. She couldn't because she had other commitments outside of the country. So between ourselves and the office of the minister, we'll coordinate to find an appropriate time for us to engage. So perhaps, Honorable Mokgalapa, we will be able to engage with the minister when we have a year for the performance agreement that we must still engage with her on. But then perhaps just use that opportunity, because it's once in a long time that we are able to engage with her. Is that fine? Does that cover you?
It covers, okay. As long as it's notified that
yes,
we will engage her
on this, yes, absolutely. No, no, it's fine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.